This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Carolina Performing Arts has a new outdoor art installation that honors women of the Triangle who have worked to advance voting rights in North Carolina. The exhibition and the installation is called 1971. Why 1971? Well, that's the year the state of North Carolina finally got around to ratifying the 19th Amendment, an amendment that gave women the right to vote, and passed in 1919, adopted into law 21 years later. Our state got on board 51 years later. Anyway, we're there now, and the exhibit uses the work of Australian projection artist Craig Walsh, infused with stories of three women involved in the fight for voter rights. 1971 will be on display at UNC Chapel Hill's campus from September 7th through the 17th, then moves to the Chapel Hill Public Library. Joining us now to talk about the exhibit is Gloria Thomas. She's director of Carolina Women's Center and part of the curatorial team that selected the women featured. Hello, Gloria.
Welcome. Hi, Frank. How are you?
I am doing well. Tell us about this whole idea and how it came about. What were you trying to do here?
Well, I have to give credit to the Carolina Performing Arts for coming up with the idea. I was just asked to be a part of the curatorial team to identify the women who are in the community doing the work of fighting for voting rights. Specifically since in 1919, when the 19th Amendment was ratified, it was still the case that women of color, particularly African-American women in the South, did not gain the right to vote. Legally, of course, but certainly in practice. And so we've had women in this community here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro who've been fighting for voting rights and against voter suppression since then and continue till this day.
And tell us about the parameters here. You were looking for, in a sense, unsung heroes in the fight for voter rights,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I like to call them unsung sheroes. But,
there you go.
Yeah, but women in the community who are making sure that individuals get to the polls, particularly those who may not feel that their vote counts. They've been encouraging them to get to the polls. They've been doing educational workshops to make sure that people know the power of their vote. And getting out and speaking to people and engaging them and even driving them to the polls.
Yeah, and there were times when that was very dangerous work.
And so it continues.
And it's still dangerous work because voter suppression continues.
Absolutely.
Even after all of these amendments have been passed. Well, tell us about who you selected and give us the names of the individuals involved, including one of them who's here right now.
One's here. We're glad that we have at least one who could make us join us today. So we have with us Mary Jones Phillips, who'll share a little bit about the work that she's been doing. We also have Mae McClendon, who's been a longtime community member and seventh generation North Carolinian, and Diane Robertson. And interestingly, they're all African-American women. And after we found out from interviews that they're all members of the local NAACP, the Chapel Hill Carrboro NAACP.
Well, let's meet one of them right now. Mary Phillips spent over three decades as an accounting professor at North Carolina Central University, and in 2013 became a voting rights advocate. Mary, welcome.
Thank you, Frank.
It's interesting because we talk about this long history and the struggle for voting rights. What made you get involved in 2013?
Well, that Viva Law. It just got me energized, I guess. I had always been involved, but not to the extent that I was propelled to do then.
That voter ID law.
The voter suppression law.
The
voter ID law. Yes.
Right. Well, tell me more about that and what got you, because, you know, again, there have been these efforts all the way through. Voting has always been a challenge. What was it about that law that got you involved?
The requirement for the ID was a key piece, but I think just the whole idea of the law. So we thought that the ID piece would be especially hard for women because women go through name changes when they get married, they get divorced. Also for black women, because a lot of the older black women maybe were delivered by a midwife, as I was, and the names may have been written quite differently.
Remember, the rule changed so that your name had to appear exactly as it appeared on the voting, whatever ID you showed had to appear exactly to as match. The voting rule. Like, and so yes. That's what you're saying.
That's yes. Yeah. And there was some little bit of leeway supposedly with that. But then we have to think about who's actually implementing this at the local precinct. So we wanted to be sure that we got out and did what we could to just nullify the intended effect of this law, which was to suppress the African-American vote, as the Fourth Circuit Court told us.
That's right. No, that's been demonstrated now in the courts that that was indeed the intention of the North Carolina legislature to suppress the black vote. Tell us what you did then.
Well, I was all excited and ready to go, and I talked with a friend, and she said, well, we first got to educate ourselves. So we started off by educating ourselves. And then we looked for information and materials and partners. So one of our partners was Democracy North Carolina, okay, which was a very important partner because they provided us with the information we needed for the most part, as well as training. We looked around for others to partner with because one person can really make an impact, but the more people you have, and the better trained they are, and the better your plan is, the better the impact.
What was the plan? They'd already passed the law, and now you may be relying on the courts. What was your plan in terms of getting people involved?
To be sure that people got out and voted. Mm-hmm. First, they have to register to vote. So we put a little bit of energy into that, but our energy was really put into getting registered voters out to vote. And so what I thought about was that I vote all the time, every election, and I get calls encouraging me to go out to vote. Why not use that energy toward people who vote, who are registered voters, vote in presidential elections, but do not vote in the midterm mm-hmm. elections? So we developed that and asked Democracy North Carolina, can you provide us with names selected in this way? And they said they could. So our focus was on getting the regular voter who skipped the midterms to vote in midterms, but also to build commitment to voting. And we learned from research, we tried to find as much of the research as possible to guide us, that if a person votes three times in a row when they start voting, that they become regular voters, lifetime voters. So that's what we were trying to do, get people committed to going to the polls for every election and vote.
One of the strategies in voter suppression, whether it was the Jim Crow version or this latest iteration that from our most recent legislature, is discouragement. It's just to discourage people from voting. They keep doing this. They're the legislature. They're in power. That's what white people do. Did you run up against that pushback when you're trying to register people?
Well, for registration is very difficult, and our volunteers have to understand that when you go out to register people to vote, you might only get two in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. So you have to train your volunteers to be patient, to understand that those two are important voters, because the North Carolina election for the president was won by 5 votes per precinct, I'm told from the data. So what you do is important. Whatever little bit you do is very important. It is very labor intensive. Be aware that even if you're phone banking, a lot of times you have a bad number, disconnected, or the person you're trying to reach is not there. So you have to be patient. You have to put a lot of woman power into it, I'll say, because my organization is a woman's organization.
Gloria, tell me more about this installation now, kind of how it's set up that to honor these women. We're going to hear more from some of the other women involved. But what's the installation all about?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But as I envision it, based on the photos that I've seen, there will be larger-than-life images of these three women projected in the trees. And you'll be able to learn more about their stories and their contributions to advocating for voting rights through an app that's downloadable. So there will be information posted near the installation so that people can chime in through the apps.
And you'll actually be able to hear some of the oral, from the audio archives, the stories of other women involved.
You'll
be able
to
listen to that from the app. And these projections, when I heard projections, I was thinking of these, you know, kind of two-dimensional flat projections against a tree. Oh, no. If it's anything like his previous work, I haven't seen the latest. I don't think it's finished yet. But previous work wraps around the trees and animates the entire tree. These things come to life with the images of the women involved, and then again, we get to hear their stories.
Absolutely. And the stories are a part of the oral histories that have been documented. We have a graduate student who's been working on the project as a part of the curatorial team, who's been interviewing all of the participants who will be projected. And so we'll have not only their stories that people can listen to, but they are part of the archives of the Southern Oral History Program, too.
We can give you a sample of that right now. The Southern Oral History Program talked to Mae McClendon, who has been working on social justice issues in North Carolina for more than 40 years, and she shared her early memories of voting. Let's listen.
My mom did not vote until probably, it was like 6 to 8, but it was in Chapel Hill. And she had to be in her 50s or 60s before she passed her first vote. I don't think my father ever voted because he died in 53. And it was just taken for granted that, you know, it was something that white people did. We lived in a town where there was a law that said Indians couldn't own property in the city limits. Then we moved to Chapel Hill, and a lady down the street, her name is Rebecca Clark. But Miss Rebecca made sure that anytime somebody moved in the neighborhood, she checked with them if they had registered to vote. And if they hadn't registered to vote, she told them where they needed to go, register to vote. Or she took them to register to vote. So she did it with my mom, because they were in organizations together at church. And then, because I wasn't old enough. So I was getting close to 18, and she said, I need somebody in this precinct. And I couldn't vote at 18, because then had to be 21. She said, I need some help in the precinct. So she got me started.
That's a clip of Mae McClendon, one of the women featured in the art installation 1971, on display in the UNC Chapel Hill campus from September 7th to the 17th. Gloria Thomas is director of Carolina Women's Center and part of the curatorial team that selected the women. Mary Phillips is one of the women honored. Mary, talk about your first experiences with voting.
May's presentation took me back to all of that. My parents did get to vote. And they were active, particularly my dad, in paying attention to the polls and paying attention to who was making decisions that affected our lives. And at school, I learned the same thing. So coming up, I was always interested in politics and thought I would actually become an attorney. But as May said, I had to be 21 to vote, so I didn't get to vote in Louisiana, where I'm from. I took my first job in Washington, D.C. I turned 21 there, and I still couldn't vote because they couldn't vote back then. I got married, moved to Chicago. I finally got to vote.
You could vote 4 or 5 times in Chicago.
No, you couldn't.
That's what I've heard.
Yes, I know. So I finally got to vote, and I remember that first experience of voting. I was really pleased about that because I had presidential candidates I favored in the 50s and 60s that I didn't get to vote for. So that was my first time voting.
Well, you talked also about canvassing and how difficult it is and the hard work. Mae McClendon recalls her first time canvassing neighborhoods and shares that story in this clip.
Well, so I registered here and then doing the McGovern campaign. A group of us would leave and go to, had to be Goldsboro. Went to Goldsboro, and I was telling people, I said, it was so cute because it was a mixed group, and it turned out to be like 2 black females and 3 white males, and they put us in this black, totally black community, and the people sitting on the porch, so it's, you know, it was warm weather, and we were laughing. I said, I got proposition. The guys got proposition. Everybody, I said, we're here to tell people about voting. And this guy said, you see that lady on that board? She was flirting with me. I said, boy. I said, we'll come being good looking. But anyway, we registered here, and then we would go out and help other places. And that place, we got back to and it was an old funeral home building. And they said, well, we just got the call from the Klan that they're going to do us in tonight, you know, so we left early.
That's a clip of Mae McClendon, one of the women featured in the art installation 1971 on display at UNC Chapel Hill's campus, September 7th to the 17th. Of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Gloria Thomas is director of the Carolina Women's Center. Mary Phillips, one of the women honored. Gloria, again, tell us a little bit about this exhibit. Will I be able to go sort of any time of the day or night, or how does it work?
Well, you actually want to go in the evening when it's dark, because that's when you'll see it best. And you won't be able to miss it. So plan to go in the evening after dark. Once dusk has set, you want to go then. And don't miss it. I think it'll run for 10 days at Polk Place, and then it'll go to the Chapel Hill Public Library for another 10 days.
You know, Mary Phillips, I just have to ask you, on this day when we've heard that the state courts have now ruled unconstitutional the political gerrymandering of this legislature, which is hard to be illegal when it comes to political gerrymandering, and of course, overruling the voter ID law. I mean, as an activist and somebody who's worked so hard to encourage people to vote, I wonder how you feel about all this.
Well, I jumped up and shouted yesterday when I heard about it. Friends sent me emails and texts about it. So, yeah, it's something else, because the U.S. Supreme Court recently said that political gerrymandering was okay.
Well, none of their business, I guess, was the point. Which means that this particular ruling would not get to the Supreme Court.
It will
Should
not.
They decide to take it, they can't take it any further. So
it
that's
will
kind
not.
Of
so that's a good thing, in my view. But gerrymandering affects voter turnout. And so now I have a response when people say to me, a response that I hope will have traction with them, when they say to me, why should I vote? My vote doesn't count. So it gives me more to talk about with them.
Mary Phillips, has somebody been talking about voting rights, an advocate featured in the exhibit that Gloria Thomas, as director of Carolina Women's Center, has been part of the curatorial team for that exhibit, 1971, on display at UNC Chapel Hill's campus, September 7th through the 17th. Gloria and Mary, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the exhibit at our website, stateofthings.org. And you can hear more about the show or find out more if you want to sign up for our newsletter at stateofthings.org. Next, Movies on the Radio, we want to know your favorite quotes from the cinema. Which lines often pepper your conversations? Is it "Make My Day"? "I'm Walking Here"? Let's hear about it. You can be part of the next Movies on the Radio. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hall of Mormon. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.